7:35, Chris Landry will join us fresh off the NFL Combine. He'll make hide and hair, hopefully, or hide nor hair, I don't know what it is, of the NFL draft upcoming. Also, all these moves going and not going in the NFL, and we'll explain that. The 49ers are making moves. Scott McLuhan finally gets let go, and we'll tell you why at least people think he got let go. I thought this was interesting. The Browns have made that trade for Brock Osweiler.
Ooh.
I thought the
first second round pick. They didn't really trade for Brock Osweiler.
Well, and to your point, VP of football operations, Sashi Brown of the Cleveland Browns, in their official statement, Sashi. They released this statement that kind of tells you exactly where the Browns stand on Brock Osweiler. This is the official statement from VP of Football Operations, Sashi Brown, and the Cleveland Browns. I didn't even notice that. Brown and Browns, right?
Clever.
We're really excited to acquire a second-round draft choice in this trade. Draft picks are extremely important to our approach in building a championship-caliber football team. We are intent on adding competition to every position on our roster and look forward to having Brock come in and compete.
They're already saying they're probably going to cut him, too, or it's possible.
They make the trade. Well, we're really happy to acquire a second-round draft choice. Press conference for that second-round choice forthcoming. And and Brock.
Does the money really make you feel better if you're Brock Osweiler? After, like, you got one shot, dude, and you biffed it.
I don't know. I mean, God, the guy. Now it's the point where, see, Brock, it's almost like if you're a number one draft choice or you're a top three draft choice in the sport. Like, remember for the longest time, Derek Williams, former Sacramento King.
Mm-hmm.
I know when we acquired him here, it was like, hey, listen, man, maybe he was just in the wrong spot.
Right.
Okay, there's a reason why.
Superstar waiting to happen.
Exactly. And I think it's the same thing if you get a huge contract. See Matt Schaub. See, who's the hell?
Rob Johnson was the dude a long time ago that ended up in Buffalo.
Who was the quarterback that was with, he was with the Seahawks. He was with the Raiders. Matt Flynn. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Packers.
Matt Cobb. What is it with Matts?
Kevin Cobb.
Yeah, right? If somebody signs you to a huge deal, it's almost like you're in the club and you're going to continue to get jobs for all because, hey, there's a once upon a time, he was really good.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't feel so bad for Brock Osweiler. It's just an interesting trade involving the Browns where if they release Osweiler, I think it knocks $5 million off their cap hit. So in effect, at the lowest, I think it's $11 million if they release Osweiler that they paid for a second round pick.
Hey. So
that's what it comes to. Is that what they're worth? $10, $11 million for a second-round pick in the NFL?
Well, if you turn that around, I mean, it sounds like they're still very interested in acquiring Jimmy Garoppolo. So if you turn around and turn it into that, you get a year of him before you have to sign him to a free agent contract. I mean, listen,
right.
If you trade for that guy, you probably end up locking him down. But still, I mean, I don't see how that's not a win for Cleveland anyway. Just get rid of the guy.
I don't know what the hell's going on, man. I don't know what the hell's going on in Dallas. Dallas was going to release Tony Romo. Now they're going to try to trade.
I know what's going on in Dallas. They're playing the media.
I guess. I mean, I'd try to trade him. You can trade him, get something for him. You got to think you can get something for Tony Romo.
I just wonder what it was that happened in the last 24 hours that, like, at this time yesterday morning, it was everywhere. Cowboys are handing Tony Romo's walking papers. He's out. They've informed him he's going to be released. And then it just didn't happen. I mean, it doesn't make any sense that news would get out there and someone would call Jerry Jones and be like, whoa, 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 hold on a second. Don't just let him go.
Right.
Like, let's talk trade here. That doesn't.
Tony Romo posted this Instagram post yesterday, and forgive the audio, but here's what Tony said to the Dallas fans. Let me set this up since we're on the radio.
That sounds like a YouTube ad, by the way.
He's in, if it's his home gym, it's the greatest gym ever. And the only reason I say it might be in his home gym, I apologize, I don't know, but I know his wife at some point walks in the background. He's either at the Cowboys facility or he's in his home gym, which looks better than any gym I've ever been in. There's music in the background, and here's his statement. Okay, so I don't know if I've ever said this publicly before. I have said I'm a Niner fan, but I don't know if I've ever said this publicly before. But I think for a long time, I've had a secret love affair with Tony Romo, and I just don't really talk about it. Like, I really like Tony Romo. I like him. I like his story. I like how he's like the really, really poor man's Tom Brady as far as draft position coming up, earning his way in. I like his attitude. I like the personality he at least lets out publicly. And for all the crap that he gets, and I get it, about being brittle, I also remember a guy coming back against the 49ers with a collapsed lung.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly he gets injured a lot, and he is injury prone. But I don't question his toughness, and I don't question his pain threshold. So I'm rooting for him.
Yeah, and when he first came into the league, I was extremely anti-Tony Romo because he was a Cowboy and because he kind of took the league by storm. It was like, shut up about this guy. Give it up. And then after a while, it was just like, how do you not – like? After he gets beaten down over and over and over again, not just physically but by the media for basically – I mean, he's a crazy prolific quarterback.
Yeah.
He's not the choker that everyone makes him out to. I mean, we're talking about a guy that almost always had his team in the game, whether he had a defense or any help around him or not. I mean, I don't know. I grew to like him quite a bit.
I'm rooting for him. I think it's okay to root for him.
I mean, you know he's going to leave it on the field, and you like guys like that.
Yes, 100%. I like that. I don't know that whatever he's – listen, he fumbled the snap against the Seahawks when he was holding the kick. That's fine. Oh, speaking of, by the way, a kicker moved on, and we'll tell you what the guy who used to hold for him said on Twitter. It's one of the best tweets of the year. We'll do that. News on the Raiders lease agreement. Could there be a delay there? And we still got to get to Scott McLuhan. Still some football to go on the drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. The relationship between kickers is always an interesting one because they're kind of separate from the football team. They're kickers. So when you got a punter and a field goal kicker, the punter generally will hold the ball. Used to be quarterbacks. We mentioned that about Tony Romo earlier in his famous fumble in the playoffs. Now, in Seattle, for example, John Ryan would hold the snap for former U.S. – not USFL or what were the Mountain Lions? What was that league? USL. Right? The USL? No, is that soccer?
UFL?
UFL?
No.
God, I was a sideline reporter. That's so sad. Whatever league that was in, I remember Stephen Hashkin
sure
playing.
Sure wasn't the USFL? No, of course it wasn't the USFL.
Stephen Hashkin played for, I want to say, Omaha one year. Came here, and I remember him being like this amazing kicker against the Mountain Lions. And then he went on and had a lot of success with the Seattle Seahawks. So Hauschka has now left and signed a four-year, $12.4 million contract with the Buffalo Bills. That's not interesting news. Why are we bringing it up? Because his punter and holder, John Ryan, went on Twitter yesterday, and he posted a goodbye. Again, not news.
Heartfelt, I'm sure.
He said, "It's been an honor to hold your balls for the last 6 years, Stephen Hauschka. Good luck in Buffalo. Unless you play us, then I hope you suck."
Nice.
That's John Ryan. And kickers also tend to have a strange sense of humor as well. John Ryan saying goodbye. And speaking of kickers, with all the free agency news involving the San Francisco 49ers, we know they've signed or are going to sign Pierre Garçon, Brian Hoyer, now Matt Barkley, Aldrick Robinson, another receiver, Logan Paulson.
Not just Sumrick. Sumrick.
Aldrick.
Aldrick.
They also signed Robbie Gould. That's
sneaky.
They're going to sign Robbie Gould to replace Phil Dawson, who's been kicking for the team, I think, since Ray Wershing in the mid-'80s. Phil Dawson, 42, 43 years old.
Oh, how dare you look over the Jeff Wilkins era like that?
That's a great point right there. There was somebody else, too. And they're like, Scott, was it – did we have Scott Bentley at one point?
Well, remember Jose Cortez?
Yes.
Who else was there?
Oh, my God.
Gary Anderson was in there for a bit. There was Mike Kofor, I believe, was a guy that...
God, Mike, Niners kickers since Ray Wershing. God, that would be a heck of a list. Did David Akers?
Yes. Yeah, David Akers was what kicked for him in the Super Bowl, didn't
he? That's right. Jeff Reed?
Yeah. Well, Joe Nedney.
Joe Nedney! Wow.
Joe's a classic, too.
So the Niners signed Robbie Gould.
Here we go.
Who couldn't cut it with the Bears back
Hold
in the
on.
Day.
What is it with the Bears castoffs too?
Dude, I'm starting. Here's what I'm getting at. It's kind of exciting because the Niners have some great picks in the draft. They have a new front office coaching staff with young, hopefully talented minds. Stanford's John Lynch. former fantastic player, and Kyle Shanahan, who took his team to the brink of the Super Bowl, comes from a good bloodline of coaches. They've got a ton of money to spend. As a Niner fan, I think it's exciting to see, hey, they got Pierre Garçon. Okay, look at that. Aldrick Robinson. Okay, now they've got Barkley and Brian Hoyer, which is, you know, arguably better than Kaepernick and Blaine Gabbert. And here we go, the Pro Bowl fullback. There's some signings to be made. But then I started reading yesterday about the Jacksonville Jaguars and the fact that they have spent, not official numbers here, but something like $17 billion in the last 4 years on free agents. And most of them are gone now. And all of a sudden it occurred to me, wait a minute. They're not done. You got to wait for the full picture. And we're not at the draft yet. But so far, couldn't you just kind of make the argument that it's like the first time you're out of the house and you get your paycheck after you move out of your parents and you got a little bit of money to spend? And you go out and you get the really good rolling papers, and maybe you buy the VCR that you didn't need, and you know, you get the hi-fi system with the 8-track. You're spending money,
mm-hmm.
but are you really spending it smartly, or are you just trying to spend the money?
That's a crapshoot, man. I mean, I'm kind of with you. Washington has won the off-season Super Bowl how many times?
You know,
I mean, this year's not one of them, but we've seen it in the past with them over and over and over again. It's not, I mean, have they signed guys that are going to help him improve on two wins? Yes. The answer to that is yes. But what's going to remain to be seen, you know, where a lot of those teams fall apart is they end up having bad drafts. Or, you know, like the Garçon contract, for example, is front-loaded. I think that's a pretty decent move. You know, bridge quarterbacks. Like, yeah, no one gets real excited about Brian Hoyer or Matt Barkley.
No.
But I don't think they're trying to sell either of those guys as the quarterback of the future. So I'm with you. I'm hesitant. Like, I'm apprehensive about the fact that they're spending money. But, hey, dude, they've got guys on that team that we've heard of now.
Yeah. I mean, we've heard of them.
And, you know, Jacksonville's problem wasn't necessarily bombing on a lot of those guys so much as their quarterback's not getting the job done.
Would it make more sense to have the free agency period come after the draft or no?
I don't know. I've thought about that a lot, too.
I know there's timing issues and OTAs and all that.
More sense in what way?
Just that I'd almost rather, as a fan, have my draft shape who I need to plug the holes free agency-wise. What I am really afraid of is that the Niners, for example, are going to go, you know what? There is that awesome receiver available in the second round, but we have Pierre Garçon now. So we're going to hold off.
You know, I'm fine with the way it is because, first off, in that situation, they might still end up taking the receiver. But if you want to look at it, if they go into this draft without having signed any of these free agents, maybe you're looking at reaching at number two for Mitchell Trubisky, whereas now you don't necessarily have to make that reach. You might still go acquire Kirk Cousins. I like the way that you can try to fill out those needs and set your draft board up better. I think it prevents you from having to reach for a guy at the top of the draft.
Well, that makes sense. And a lot of these guys, as somebody's saying on the text line, and we understand, they're bridge guys. And many of them are familiar with the system. It's just right now, for me, Kyle Juszczyk and Earl Mitchell are the most exciting players they've acquired. That's what gets me going. I mean, and Robbie Gould. I
love a good kicker.
3 days after team executives told NFL owners they had secured a $650 million loan from B of A, no details about the agreement were revealed during the Vegas Stadium Authority board meeting. I believe this was yesterday in downtown Vegas. The 11-member board will not know the details of the loan before NFL voters are expected to vote in just 3 weeks on the Raiders' move to Southern Nevada.
That's weird.
Yeah, it is a little bit weird, and it's interesting to keep an eye on this. We'll be down there in 3 weeks for spring training, and we're going to double up, as we've said, and also be present at the NFL meetings for anything that does break. It's starting to look more and more likely that there will not be a decision made at those meetings. This smells very much like a delay. until sometime in May at the earliest with their next meeting. But we'll keep you posted on all things Raiders and their possible move down to Las Vegas. Chris Landry will join us next. We'll talk about the NFL Combine, what he saw. We'll look ahead to the draft and really kind of break down some of these free agents. We'll ask him about some of those Niner moves as well. And the Washington Redskins have fired Scott McLuhan. We knew that move was coming, and we'll tell you what they said and why they said it when we get back in 3 minutes on The Drive. Sports 1140 KHDK. Sam Amick of USA Today, our good friend, coming up at 8:05. Chris Landry in about 5 minutes. I mentioned earlier Matt George is wearing his KHDK hat and sweatshirt. Matt, your sticker is still on the brim of your hat. I don't know if you knew this.
Thanks for informing me during the break.
Do you need help taking it off, or you just did you forget?
No, you said you wanted to buy one, so the more I look patented and brand new, the easier it is to sell for a higher price.
Your game-worn KHDK hat?
Signed by Christopher Laud.
Yes, signed by Christopher Laud, so it has increased value. I've often wondered what it would be like, and I need to open up a separate business as a hobby. I've often wondered what it would be like to work for an advertising agency and just come up with commercial ideas. It sounds like one of those things that's more fun than it really is. Uh-huh. But I was thinking yesterday, a friend of mine is doing a documentary, and he was mentioning in passing that one of the guys he has to go interview is golf buddies with Carlton Fisk. And so my dumb mind started thinking, I wonder how many times Carlton Fisk golf buddies, when he shanks one, have like jumped off the tee box and waved left. So then all day this got like a contest between me and my friend texting back and forth on real life things that Carlton Fisk could wave, because you'll remember, if you're not from that generation, but you'll remember Carlton Fisk and the famous home run, one of the great TV moments ever, and he was trying to wave the ball fair, and it was fair, and then he jumped up. How would that apply in real life? For example, if he worked at an airport and was guiding in airplanes, if he was a parking attendant. And then it occurred to me, how has somebody not grabbed Carlton Fisk and put him in a commercial and just had him out in real life doing random things where he waves things in?
There has to be some way to sell that.
Doesn't that smell like a Geico commercial or something where Carlton, yes, he's in a grocery store and there's a line open and he's just waving
them over,
waving people with carts over? I got a job for you, Carlton, because he's not really doing much right now, is he?
I don't think so.
He's probably like the color commentator for the Tampa Bay Rays or something, and we just don't know it.
He's probably fine.
Before we get
good
to
idea though.
Thank you. Before we get to Chris Landry, let's we'll do a PR agency, Nate. You and me. It'll be David Nick's PR.
Right.
JR, you're on the drive.
Hey ladies. How are you?
Hi.
No lady. Katie's homesick.
JR.
Oh, I see what you were doing. Okay.
Sorry, Nate. Yeah. Have you ever seen that commercial where the ex Olympians are all doing things like sliding under cars, jumping over hurdles, and they do the kind of same thing where they use their profession and you know, anything what they did, whatever athletic event they were in.
That's what you got to do, because let's be honest, most ex-Olympians, they're not doing anything either.
Yeah, and that's why that commercial is so funny. I don't even know what it was for, but I remember the guy that was sliding under the car as a mechanic, he was a bobsledder.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious.
You got the idea.
You're a genius, brother. Hey, I'm excited about the Niners. I know that it's a change, but we have nowhere to go but up. So why not be excited about some of these things? It's new management. They're putting a little stamp on their changes. They're bringing in these guys. Who knows? They could bring in, I don't know, I'd love to see if they could get some of the old Niners. I don't know, they might be 60 or 70 years old, but whatever it takes to get this team to get some more wins, I'm for it. And don't forget about us signing the tight ends. We extended Selleck's contract.
Well, and Vance McDonald got a nice big fat contract,
and Vance
too.
And both those guys have smoking hot wives, so that's all
good. Perfect.
That's important. Right, honestly.
I feel like both of those contracts were Trent Baalke's middle finger to this franchise on his
so
way
too.
Out the door.
I think he was ringing and running. Here's the thing with the Niners, and I kind of like what JR said, and I really wish Jed York would be willing to poke some fun at himself. And your San Francisco 49ers, the problem is there's exactly two places. There's one and zero wins. That's what worries me. They have exactly two worst spots they could be. But they're making moves, and we'll talk to Chris Landry right now about them and so much more. Welcome in, Chris Landry. It's Dave and Nate. How are you?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great. Good. We're head spinning right now. Jimmy Garoppolo was apparently hacked, and Brock Osweiler is going to the Browns for a pick and
all, no,
or, oh, wait,
with
what is
a
it?
Pick.
With a pick. I'm sorry. That's right. The Texans paid off the Browns. Chris, you've been around this sport a few years. Have you this trade, I don't want to say it's groundbreaking, but it certainly is not the normal trade we see in the NFL.
No, it's normally what's done in the NBA.
Yeah.
It's not legal in technical terms. In fact, that's the reason why that everybody dismisses the fourth and fifth round, the fourth and sixth round picks that were included. That's the only thing that makes it technically legal. It's not legal to dump a salary for picks. And it is something that I know the league will look at. We've had a half a dozen of these things that were not quite as obvious as this, but the Sam Bradford situation was come under a lot of scrutiny last year. So it does happen. The Browns have a lot of cap room. That's all they have is cap room. So they are in the position of hoarding picks. That's what they've done. We'll see if they can do something with them. They're going to have a tough time because he's not tradable, and this contract's not tradable, and they're going to have to even eat more of it if they want somebody to say take him off their hands. They're not going to get anything for him of note. There's not a real trade market for him. They're not going to get a fourth round pick or anything. If they go ahead and eat the contract and say convert 12 of the $16 million into a signing bonus, and now he's $4 million, then you might have a team like the Jets or someone that's willing to take him, but certainly not at this price, and certainly not at a very high price in terms of trade compensation.
So we go from the hot quarterback name of last year to the hot quarterback name of this year in Kirk Cousins. I mean, that's been all over the place, Chris, because he signed the tender and everyone's like, oh, well, that means he's staying in Washington. Now it sounds like he wants to force a trade, with some people even saying that he straight up said, I'm going to be a 49er at some point. What do you think the landing spot's going to be for him?
Well, I think first of all, there's a couple ways it could play out. He could sign the tender and show up on time and be a good sport, or he can just sit out all the offseason until he has to report and just play and be a free agent next year. The Redskins are in a situation where they can just play it out, not trade him. They're insistent they're not going to trade him. He signs the tender, then, it's not that they can't trade him. They still could trade him. But their decision and their dilemma is, do they, obviously he's the only chance they got. If they don't have him, then they're a team that's completely in rebuild mode. Do they go ahead and get something for him now? As I'm starting to be really convinced that he's not going to sign a long-term deal with the Redskins at any point, not even at the end of next year. So if you're the Redskins, do you get something for him now? He's never going to have a higher trade value than he is right now. Or do you not trade him and hope that you can smooth things over, and by the end of next year he has a good year and everybody holds hands and sings Kumbaya and all is hunky-dory and we sign a new deal? Those are the options right there, and I don't know what's going to happen and what decision they're going to make. It's been a very, very dysfunctional situation in Washington this offseason.
Chris Landry joining us on KHTK, and staying on that, now we see the story that Kirk Cousins actually asked Dan Snyder for a trade, mm-hmm. and Snyder said, don't hold your breath. Now, I'm curious, in a bargaining position now, let's just assume that Mike Shanahan and the Niners want Kirk Cousins, and Kirk Cousins obviously belongs with the tag to the Redskins for at least one more year, but as you just alluded to, are they going to be able to actually re-sign him next year or lose him basically for nothing? So who's in the driver's seat in that situation? Are the Niners with what they have, or are the Redskins because they have the asset?
Well, the Niners are not in the driver's seat. They have nothing. I mean, they can offer picks, and
sure,
they can offer a lot, and they can make, see if they can tempt Washington to make the trade. But he's, let's call it like it is, he's Washington's property. Now, again, here's the other thing. He has not, unless he did it first thing this morning, he hasn't signed his tender. He's going to sign it because he's not going to turn away the money, the $25 million this year. He has control to some degree in that he can control his future. He doesn't have to sign a long-term deal, and word is that he won't. So he has some degree of leverage, but he can't trade himself. Only the Redskins can do that. So, You know, there's no complete control here, but of anybody is in more control than anyone is Kirk Cousins. He can get $25 million this year. He'll play, and he can decide where he's going to play next year. So he's the one that's in the most control of everyone.
Chris Landry of LandryFootball.com joining us on the drive. Well, as far as what the 49ers have added to their roster so far, I mean, you've got, you know, you signed a Pro Bowl fullback, but you put some big money there. You got a lot of front-end money to Pierre Garçon and a couple of replacement-level quarterbacks. How would you assess what they've done so far?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think, you know, it's a bad roster. I think you can look at it. You can take apart the Pierre Garçon and say, well, you know, older guy, why are you doing that? It gives them a chance to be competitive, at least to try to put an offense together. As you kind of alluded to, it's a short-term deal, so it front-loaded money, so it's not going to be a long-term deal. But, you know, it really is going to come down to what they do in the draft. And there's not a lot that you can't really build your team through free agency. It's important to try to find some pieces, and you've seen that. Kyle has worked with a fullback before. It's important to what he likes to do. So you go out and get a fullback, secure that. You know, someone that he's, you can do a lot of the things that they want to do. And, you know, getting, you know, people will look at the quarterbacks. Yeah, they got two guys that were with the Bears that, you know, Hoyer is, you know, a guy that is serviceable player. And Matt Barkley played pretty well in the limited snaps he had with Chicago. Neither one of them are the answer, but, you know, they had nothing. And now they've got two guys that were in the same room together and can work well together. Now they just got to find a starter. And it's very likely that, you know, they may have to, it will draft a young guy, and one of these guys that they just signed may end up starting for them. This is not going to be for Niner fans. I think they are aware of this. If they're not, they should be, is they're not going to be very good next year. They're not talented enough, but it's going to be a slow build, and I'm curious to see what else they can do, particularly on the defensive side, to kind of fill out some of the pieces in the second wave. But it's going to be about building this team through the draft and hitting it well there.
You had mentioned, too, that Kyle Shanahan likes working with a fullback, and that's just really not something we've seen a ton of with Carlos Hyde. And I'm frankly, I don't know. I'm asking you, I guess, how you think that transition is going to be for him, because just from a sheer a matter of not having seen a lot of reps of it, I don't know.
Well, I think what's really important in the West Coast style of offense is to have the ability to catch the football, block, do multiple things. I think in terms of, you know, with Carlos, he's more of a runner, and that's what his role is. You know, I think that he can be effective. He's the one guy that's a keeper, and I think that they've got to upgrade that. It's one of the many spots that they need to upgrade. I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, a couple of moves that they made at receiver. That helps. Certainly, they've got a couple of spots on the offensive line, but they've got, you know, three that they need to upgrade. You know, defensively, a lot of upgrade is needed. So, listen, I think there's some positives in the secondary, but, you know, they need some components on the defensive front. But a running back, I think, is going to be key, and preferably two guys that can be really effective that they can count on is what he did in Atlanta and what he's done everywhere he's been. He wants to run the football. That's what he learned from his dad, and they've got to be able to, improve the running game with the offensive line and dependable backs and versatile backs, and again, a fullback that can help not only lead in kickout blocks, but you can wheel out of the backfield and, you know, get isolated and get an easy pass thrown to you, those type of things that he's going to want to do, because he's going to be dealing with either a veteran quarterback with limited physical skills or a young quarterback that he's going to have to bring along slowly, and they're going to need a healthy running game and a defense to kind of allow them to be competitive.
Chris Landry with us on KHDK, our football insider, both college and NFL. And Chris, just some perspective from you again, especially with your scouting background. When you look at the landscape, and it seems like a story pops up every year, and this year one of the recurring themes is going to be Mike Glennon. What the heck is that? And Tony Romo, and now the Osweiler price that was paid to get him off the books. It just seems like there is such a lack of quarterback talent that teams are willing, Jimmy Garoppolo, for example, to pay a ton to get guys in some cases that haven't had a ton of success or just show a little bit of potential. Is this something that's happening right now in the NFL that's an outlier, or has this been happening since the dawn of time in the NFL and we're just making a big deal out of it?
What's happening in football in general?
Yeah.
It's a byproduct of how the game is taught. At the high school level, there's very limited spring practice. They have all these 7-on-7s. So everything is just the spread. There's no reading of defenses. It's just very simplified. Now, they go up to college. In college, you got a 20-hour work week. What's the simplest thing to do if you're a coach in college? You don't have much time to work with these guys and teach them how to understand how to read defenses. By the time you do that with a talented young quarterback, he's graduated or he's ready to leave. So what you do is, because they're leaving early, is you need to get them acclimated to some system of success where it's simplified. So it's very quarterback friendly. And you see that where the reads are coming from the sidelines, whether it's signals or whether these boards that show, you know, a picture of a squirrel and, you know, Heidi Klum and, you know, and that leads to a play. That's very simplified. They're not reading defenses. It's called from the sideline. So you've got that. Then you have, that's what is your pool that you are drafting from into the NFL. Well, in the NFL, we don't have OTAs. Quarterback coaches can't work with their quarterbacks. They're basically hiring their own quarterback gurus, which are not as qualified as their quarterback coaches, because we have this, you know, really asinine, quite frankly, rule in that we can't really develop guys. Certainly the physical aspect of, you know, not being like the old days in barbaric where you're lining up in scrimmage in the off season and all that's understandable. But to not allow as much time as necessary to put into your own craft of developing is certainly hurt. So, I mean, you put all of that into a mix and you realize, how are you going to develop quarterbacks if they're not coming from that system? A lot of these guys are capable of learning and doing it, but they've never done it because the process is so speeded up. And oh, by the way, you know, we draft these guys, overdraft them, because the need, as you said, is so great. The supply and demand is in favor of the demand and not the supply. So we overdraft the quarterback, and guess what happens when we overdraft a quarterback that's not ready to play? Well, everybody in the media and the fans are screaming for the guy to get on the field, right? They're not ready, and you better get him on the field. And then, oh, they don't really play well for the first couple of years, 3 years. Well, ding, 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 of course they're not going to play well. And then you know what we do then? We fire the coach. We fire the GM. We start all over. Well, I don't want that quarterback. I want the, you know, that's what happens. That's why bad teams are bad and good teams are good. Good teams have stability. They understand. They see and draft a young quarterback, develop them, let them sit. These guys are not ready to play. It takes a while to develop them, and you need to be patient. And when you don't have enough of them, people tend to force guys on the field early, and we are rushed to judgment. I mean, do you realize that Joe Montana was – Bill Walsh had him reading half the field until his fifth year? He was on half field reads until his fifth year. His first 4 years, he wouldn't give him the whole field to read. This is Joe Montana, and we're expecting these kids today to be able to do it. So it's simplified. It's not as sophisticated, which is fine. It gets them on the field quicker, but then it's a little bit, a lot easier to defense, too, when it's not as complicated. So that in a nutshell, not in a nutshell, that's a soapbox long-winded answer, as I usually give, to why we are in this whole dilemma of quarterbacks that don't run a pro-style system. And people say, well, why don't more college teams do it? Because you don't have time to do it. You get a 20-hour work week, and you don't have time to develop them the way you used to, you know, 25 years ago.
Yeah, and part of that, too, I mean, it's because of that, you end up a lot of times at that level just finding an athlete that's going to have the ball in his hands on every play, and you get guys that can make plays that way. I'm curious. Myles Garrett seems to be the unanimous number one pick, right? Who is your top offensive skill player in this draft?
Well, I think that when you look at the top playmaker, there's not the offensive, you know, receiver that's a big time player. I think it's going to be, you know, one of the running backs. I think that Leonard Fournette would be in play. I think O.J. Howard from Alabama would be in play. And it's a really good question. I've never had it asked of me that way. There is that, you know, kind of that void because the quarterback's not there. The big-time receiver's not there, although there's some good ones. I would put Fournette and Howard in there. Although I do have, you know, Corey Davis and John Ross with the same grades, but I have them stacked a little bit lower. It's a great point. We don't, it's more of a defensive draft. And so you don't have that elite quarterback, although you're going to see two or three go high in the first round, just because of what we talked about. You don't have that dominant receiver that's going to go in the top five or six. And you don't have that left tackle that everybody's going to take in the top five or six, I don't think. So I think you're going to see a lot of defense. And I think it's Fournette if you want that physical running back that's going to have the 20-25 carries, or Dalvin Cook, or, you know, maybe Christian McCaffrey's going to be a guy go later in the first round. But it's a good question, and I would tell you that you're probably going to have mixed reviews on different boards on who that guy might be.
Chris, the season never ends for you. Tell everybody how they can read you, hear you, see you, and do all the things they need to do to get that knowledge in the offseason.
Well, we got a special discount for our great folks in the Sacramento listening area and KHTK listeners, he said. it's KHTK Sacramento is the code you want to put in. And at LandryFootball.com, that's what we do. We take you inside the film room. We've got all our draft boards up. We got all the free agent boards, all the NFL players by position. So it's not just the free agents in there. It's guys that may become free, and you know how they graded last year. And we've got a team-by-team breakdown. We've broken down every team and graded every player. So we got all the detailed information. We've got our notebooks up, and we're making it special free right now to where every bit of the information and news that's coming around visits and signings yesterday we had. I think our notebook had nearly 10,000 words in it of news and notes. So it's a lot of information. You can follow me on Twitter at LandryFootball, but come check us out at LandryFootball.com. Use that code, and it'll get you a special discount. It takes you through all this offseason, all next football season when we're breaking down the games for you. So check it out. We love being on with you, and hope that everybody takes advantage of that special offer.
Nobody talks football like Chris Landry. Take advantage of that, absolutely. And we'll keep talking to you, of course, through the offseason leading up to the draft. Always appreciate your time, Chris.
Hey, thank you so much. Have a great weekend, guys.
All right, you too. Chris. That's Chris Landry joining us, as he does every week.
Thank you so much. Have a great weekend.
Take care.
Take care.
Sam Amick of USA Today join us. We'll update some stuff going on in the NBA and around the NBA, including his thoughts on the MVP race and where those rookies are. We'll take a break. Drive Sports 1140 KHDK.